Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, I represent Arbor Homes, LLC. The plaintiff in this case, West Bend Mutual Insurance Company, issued policies of insurance to a plumber, Wilmez Plumbing, under both commercial general liability and umbrella liability policies that purport to exclude coverage for any damage caused by exposure to, inhalation of, or existence of contact with bacteria or fungi, West Bend then sought to exclude coverage for a...
Let's see how you get around the voluntary payment issue. You made a very generous settlement with these people, and maybe it was a prudent settlement, but you can understand why the insurance company doesn't want people settling tort claims without consulting the insurance company, since it's going to be paying for it. That seems so elementary.
Yes, Your Honor. So I will address the voluntary payment issue first. Under applicable Indiana law, as articulated principally in notice cases such as Dreaded and Triage, and as the district court recognized, when there is a lack of notice or a voluntary payment, there arises a rebuttable presumption of prejudice to the insurer, and that can be rebutted. In this case, Your Honor, we believe there were disputed issues of fact which made summary judgment inappropriate with respect to whether there was prejudice to West Bend. While Your Honor characterizes this as a generous settlement, Arbor Homes believes that, in fact, it was a very prudent settlement because it acted quickly to prevent any personal injury claims. It settled without any liability for personal injury. It settled without any liability for the homeowners, that is, Kurt and Jay Lorch's attorney's fees. And it also was able to build the home. I mean, Arbor's in the business of building homes, so it was able to build a home for them, repurchasing their home, and quickly resolving that liability. The majority of the Indiana case law that addresses the prejudice to the insurer, again, is in the notice context. And that concerns the insurer's ability to select defense counsel, to negotiate rates with defense counsel, and other concerns such as that. And importantly, in the Dreaded case, the court noted that the presumption. Yes, Your Honor.
I'm terribly curious why Arbor decided to rely on the plumber to notify West Bend of the claim. It didn't seem like that was like a reasonable approach, because the plumber caused the damage and, you know, was probably reluctant to engage the insurer in the process. And I also understand your position that West Bend shouldn't be able to deny coverage when the company denied that Arbor was an additional insured. But should we assume here that West Bend's litigation position is the same as it would have been before Arbor gave the homeowners, that settlement? But I also want to add that I thought Arbor has behaved extremely admirably. So whatever happens here, I think you're wonderful.
Well, thank you, Your Honor. As counsel for Arbor, I appreciate that statement. With respect to whether it was prudent to rely on Wilmez to contact the insurance company, Arbor believed it was because, again, Wilmez was the party who was likely going to suffer the liability, and there is still a pending lawsuit in Indiana State Court against Wilmez with respect to the damage.
Wilmez have assets?
Well, Your Honor, the likely only asset that would be recoverable is this insurance policy. but I think that highlights an important point about prejudice in this case, because in the state court litigation, after the state court litigation was filed, this declaratory judgment action was filed in federal court, in which West Bend sought a declaration not only as to Arbor but also as to Wilmez that there was no coverage as a result of the fungi and bacteria exclusion.
The problem here is that prejudice really isn't at issue. It's irrelevant in a voluntary payment without consent situation. The line of cases that you're relying on having to do with notice have a prejudice component to the analysis, but not the voluntary payment clause cases.
Well, Your Honor, there is case law in which voluntary payment, there has been a prejudice analysis in the voluntary payment situation. For example, a case from the Northern District of Indiana, I believe it's the Crown Packaging International case.
But Indiana law, as of 2011, says no, the Travelers Insurance case.
Yes, the Travelers Insurance versus Maplehurst case?
Right. That forecloses this as a defense for you to the voluntary non-consensual payment.
Respectfully, Your Honor, Arbor disagrees because we believe that the Indiana Court of Appeals has not correctly divine the meaning of the Indiana Supreme Court's precedents upon which it relied. We believe the
why on earth would there be, you have an insured that's a company, it's not a hapless individual. Why on earth should a court get involved in whether this was a prudent expenditure or not, putting the insurance company expense of defense and so on, when they have a perfectly clear provision, perfectly sensible, which says if you want to enforce this insurance policy, you have to get our permission before you make any sort of settlement. Which is anyway, everybody knows that. Even individuals know if you're in a traffic accident, you have to call your insurance company and tell them about it. You don't just pay off the person you've hit and then call up the insurance. Everyone knows that. So what's the excuse? Why would you create a why would you say, oh, let's have a lawsuit in which, you know, we show that we didn't pay more than we had to? Why bother?
Well, Your Honor, our
excuse for what Arbor did. It just you know, drop the ball so it doesn't get covered with by insurance. What's wrong with that?
Well, Your Honor, I think the reasonableness of Arbor's conduct should be assessed in light of the record evidence that it instructed Wilmez to put them on notice.
That's Wilmez. Wilmez is the tortfeasor. Why do you want to deal with a plumber? Why don't you just call up the insurance company? You're an insured. Call up the insurance company.
Well, Your Honor, Wilmez had informed Arbor.
What kind of plumber fails to connect the internal sewer pipe to the outside? And this is the person. If he forgets to connect the sewer pipe to the outside, is he going to forget to call the insurance company?
Your Honor, we had received notice from Wilmez that they had provided this information to the insurer, and so reasonably.
Why didn't you do it yourself? It's a phone call.
I understand, Your Honor.
It's incomprehensible. There's a lot of money involved. Why should courts get involved in something like this? Contract clear on its face between two businesses. Why would you ever want to go beyond the contract, the face of the contract, not some, you know, extraordinary, you know, a storm, a tsunami or something, impossible to give the notice, records destroyed, something like that. Sure, there are always excuses, but there's no excuse here.
Well, Your Honor, there's still that line of reasoning has often been urged that there could be no excuse in late notice as well. But the Indiana Supreme Court.
Yeah, there can be excuses. You don't have an excuse.
Well, Your Honor, what I can offer
is. You acted imprudently. Not you personally, obviously. This is imprudent action by what appears to be a substantial company. So there's no excuse for that.
Okay. Well, Your Honor, all I can say is that Arbor believed that Wilmez had put the insurer on notice. With respect to whether it was prudent, I leave that to the court. But again, with respect to whether there was prejudice, there's certainly no question the outcome.
It's pending against Wilmez. Are you the plaintiff? Is Arbor the plaintiff?
Arbor Homes is the plaintiff, yes.
So you sue the guy. But you also trust him to notify your insurer. I don't get that.
Well, the lawsuit came after we had learned that the insurer had not been placed on notice. I would say that. And I see I'm cutting into my rebuttal time, so I will save some time for rebuttal.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Craig. Mr. Smith?
May it please the Court. As Your Honor indicated, Maplehurst is pretty clear on this issue. And it is a 2011 decision, which came down after the federal decisions that they relied on. It is apparent where an insured enters into a settlement agreement without the insurer's consent in violation of a voluntary payment provision, that obligation cannot be recovered from the insurer, and prejudice is irrelevant. Period. That's what our Court of Appeals has said on that particular issue.
You know, of the 13 possible scenarios for coverage that you have listed on page 21 of your brief, four or five of them involve water damage that would be appear to be excluded under the bacteria fungi exclusion, and the remaining scenarios seem highly improbable to me. If this is a general commercial liability policy and it excludes most obvious and common forms of damages for a plumber, what use is it? I mean, I read the briefs, and all I could think of is, are these people sure they want to win a case with an admission that your general insurance policies actually cover very limited, very rare scenarios and exclude the most obvious dangers? Who in their right mind would buy your insurance after that?
Well,
want a published opinion out there, you know, saying these things?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Do you sell a policy that doesn't have this exclusion?
Yes, Your Honor. It's the fungi bacteria exclusion is an endorsement. It is not part of the standard CGL form.
What is the difference in premiums?
Yeah, that's my next question.
I don't know that was ever developed before the district court, Your Honor, in terms of that. I can also tell you that ISO does write an endorsement that extends coverage for bacteria and fungi.
So plumbers can buy this policy, this coverage from you?
Absolutely.
This plumber didn't?
Did not. No. And they were defaulted. I mean, we sued them on the declaratory judgment as well, saying that you don't have coverage under this policy because of this exclusion. They never responded, and we ended up getting a default judgment against them.
Look, the damage here was not caused by bacteria. It was caused by the ick factor.
It was caused It was caused by bacteria, Judge.
After every bit of bacteria was scrubbed away, these people still did not want this house. And, you know, forgive me for being indelicate, but who can blame them? No one wants a brand new house that has been submerged in feces. Not unless there's a substantial discount involved. I can't even imagine what that would be. Isn't there a question of fact here about the cause of the damage?
Not at all, Judge, because when you look at what they did, once they went out and observed what was going on out there, they hired an expert for the sole purpose of doing an inspection for fecal bacteria. That expert came in, tested for fecal bacteria, found E. coli, found that it had been pulled throughout the entire house because of the HVAC, and made very specific recommendations for an E. coli remediation protocol, where they had to remove everything, they had to scrub everything down with bleach.
Judge Rovner is pointing to an actually well-substantiated psychological puzzle. So suppose you show a person the sort of container cup that you provide a urine sample in, and you tell the person this has been used for urine specimens. Now we're going to scrub it into an oven. It's going to be heated to 1,000 degrees. It's going to be absolutely sterilized. And they do all that. Now we're going to ask you to drink a glass of water from this. And people will not do that.
I completely agree.
It's just a psychological quirk. Once something has become associated with filth, then it becomes repulsive. It cannot be cured. I'd be very interested in what you had to tell the successive buyer, because you said you were candid, right, in disclosing what had happened.
Arbor Homes was.
Arbor Homes.
Yeah, the company, the insurance company, was not the one that sold the home.
So, correct. But the house was sold at a big discount, wasn't it?
You'll have to ask them that. I believe there was some type of a discount that was involved in the resale of the home.
Right.
And that's correct. But, I mean, the problem is that they didn't want to stay in that house because of the E. coli. I mean, that's what the evidence shows.
Well, but the next people, presumably, were satisfied that there wouldn't be E. coli there, right?
I don't know. That's not before the court.
Never heard of the court either. Thought, oh, yeah, just nice little bacteria.
Yeah, I would assume that Arbor Homes did make it some type of a disclosure as to the sale to the subsequent purchasers.
They did.
Yeah, and they may have. You know, the problem is we don't have any evidence from the successive purchasers as to why they purchased it and felt comfortable purchasing it, what type of a discount they demanded in order to go into the house. There's no evidence along those lines at all. All we know is Arbor Homes says the things that they did and the damages that they are claiming is to eradicate the bacteria and make sure that house was going to be safe for anybody else that moved into it. That brings it squarely within the fungi bacteria exclusion. There has to be that causation. If all you're dealing with is just cleaning up excrement and not going through that whole protocol for E. coli, you've got a different situation. You've got a much different situation. On the examples you gave, Your Honor, in terms of water getting out, if all that's involved in the cleanup is repairing the drywall that was damaged by water, and they don't go through an entire E. coli or fungi or mold protocol, different issue. That's the causative requirement in that exclusion is the damages have to be caused by either fungi or bacteria. And that's what distinguishes that from a lot of the other cases they've been talking about.
Well, any form of water damage usually triggers a mold protocol, right?
If the water damage creates mold, that's picked up by that exclusion.
Usually they do it in a preventative way. They just assume that that's...
I mean, obviously, it depends how quickly you get to it.
Well, if water is standing for 3 days, it's the sort of rule of thumb.
It does.
So we had mold damage. If it's standing for 3 days, you're going to have molds.
And that may very well be the case. Again, if someone gets out there quickly, the day it occurs and repairs are made, you may not have mold. You may not have fungus. But, you know, what that exclusion is designed to do is exactly the type of expenses that were incurred in this case where you go through a full-blown E. coli remediation protocol where you encapsulate the basement area, or not the basement area, the crawl space, you encapsulate it in concrete to make sure E. coli doesn't get back out again. That's extraordinary. And I agree, they went to extraordinary expenses to try to keep their customer happy. And they're one of the few companies that probably does that these days. But the question becomes, can they then pass that on to the insurance company and say, you guys have to pay for what we did to try to keep a customer happy? And one of the other things I think is very important on the voluntary payment issue is that they had a certificate of insurance in March 22 of 2007, which identified West Bend as Wilmes' insurance company and indicated on the COI, the certificate of insurance, that they were an additional insurer. So they knew. They knew as of March 22 of 2007 that they were supposed to be an additional insured under our policy. They say they go to Wilmes and say, go tell your insurance company that there's a claim they need to get a hold of us. Right below that affidavit from their vice president of operations is the following statement. When we didn't hear back from the insurance company within 30 days, we decided to go ahead and settle. Pick up the phone. Call, do something in order to get the insurance company involved, because the insurance company brings a lot of things to settlement issues. They bring expertise. They bring the ability to try to get cases resolved for a lower amount. That's why you notify them.
That's good.
And, you know, quite frankly, insurance companies make economic decisions all the time where they will settle a claim rather than incur the cost of having to litigate declaratory judgments and defend their insureds against lawsuits. They make economic decisions. And there's nothing to say that didn't occur, would not have occurred in this case. It's the other issue. None of my people were deposed. They didn't depose them and say, okay, what would you guys have done if, in fact, you had been notified? There's no evidence in the case. There's their speculation that they just would have said go away. But there is no competent evidence in the record as to what would have been would have occurred in this case if, in fact, that notice had been provided and the request for the consent. And again, when you look at their interrogatory answers, they've admitted that they did not obtain West Bend's consent. They say, well, we thought that they were notified. We weren't. The only evidence in the record is that we were not notified of the settlement. The settlement takes place in June of 07. We find out about the settlement in October of 2008. You know, that's a big difference. We had no opportunity to get involved, period. And that's why that voluntary payment provision is in there. They're not, as Your Honor has indicated, they're not an unsophisticated company. This is a company that builds a ton of homes. They knew because of the certificate of insurance that, in fact, they were supposed to be an additional insured under the policy, and they just simply didn't notify us. Period. Didn't ask for consent. So I am happy to answer any other questions that you might have.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Smith.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Craig, do you have any further time?
Your Honor, following up on Mr. Smith's comments concerning what would come within the scope of the fungi bacteria exclusion, I think his answer to this court's question points out why that exclusion, in fact, provides illusory coverage. There's tremendous discretion for the insurer as to whether this falls within the exclusion. If there's water damage, then there may be mold, there may be bacteria.
Well, apparently you could have asked for the larger coverage, broader coverage.
That may be, Your Honor, but within
I'm sympathetic to you, I have to say, because this is a large firm. There are a lot of difficulties often interpreting insurance contracts, but these provisions, the fungi exclusion and the voluntary payments, they're very clear. They're very clear, and if you're in the building business, you'd know exactly what you were giving up. And if you didn't like it, you'd pay. Do we know anything about what the premiums are? What the extra premium would be?
I don't believe there's record evidence on that, Your Honor. But with respect to the clarity of the provisions, the Indiana Supreme Court stated in the American States versus Kiger case that there are times when policies cannot be read literally because they would exclude coverage. And for a large segment of a business, such as the gasoline station in the Kiger case or the tavern in the Mike Speedway Lounge case, and that's where...
But if you look at across the whole range of mistakes by plumbers, how often do they involve fungi or bacteria?
I would say for at least half of what the plumbers do, my time's expired.
That's a little loose. Is there any evidence in the record about
Your Honor,
illusory this would be?
In terms of
claims against plumbers, insurers are based on fungi or this bacteria.
I don't believe there's record on statistics. My half comment was sort of a colloquial way of saying there are pipes to carry clean water and pipes to carry the sewage. Here, anytime there's a pipe carrying sewage, you would definitely have bacteria. And even the clean water, that is, of course, a medium for bacteria.
But most, I'm just thinking of my experience, never had I have had a leak that caused molds, did have that once. But most of the time, you know, a faucet is dripping, or you want to replace a faucet, you replace your sink, or you get a new refrigerator and it has to be attached and this and that, an ice machine. These bacteria, fungi problems, although they certainly occur, they're not uncommon, the mold problem, pipe bursts and so on. But is that such a large component of claims against plumbers that if you don't have that covered, you're really getting nothing for your premium?
Well, Your Honor, in light...
There ought to be evidence about that, right?
Well,
you want to show that this insurance contract is illusory, you'd have to present evidence about how many claims are made by people who have this, by insureds who have this exclusion.
Well, Your Honor, just briefly, I think the best evidence in this case in terms of the illusory coverage is the fact that the bulk of damages here being requested are not related to the remediation of the bacteria. The bulk of those damages occurred once it was undisputed the bacteria had been killed, and still this was interpreted as being within the provision. So for that reason, Your Honor, we do believe the coverage was illusory, and we ask this Court to reverse the judgment of the District Court.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Craig and Mr. Smith.